The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, along with the birthday boy, our Bubba, Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. How are you, Andy?
Doing great, Kyle. Yourself?
You had a birthday in 42. Had to feel good, doesn't it? You're still on the elevation up. You haven't
still
peaked
on the right
yet.
Side of the soil, I mean,
you just keep getting better all the time. It's pretty amazing. You've been in track wrestling now for a year and a half, right in there. So what kind of things are you excited about with the job and the where things are going with the website and the product?
Everything, man. It's 24/7, 365 wrestling. It's what I wanted to do for the last 15 plus years, and chance to go all over the country for what we're doing here. I was just thinking about it in the last 2 months. I've been in just about every corner of the country, you know, in Philadelphia, Delaware, South Beach, Phoenix, Oregon. And then in the last year, I think it's been like close to 30,000 miles in the air going all over the world for world championships and stuff. So been blessed to have the opportunity to cover wrestling all over the world and, you know, getting paid to do it and, you know, seeing this thing at track wrestling take off a little bit. I mean, we're making some gains and, you know, doing more and more all the time. And it's been exciting to see our growth over the course of the last 18 months.
Are they identifying you with track wrestling over the register and press citizen as you were before? Are they kind of seeing you as that guy now?
Some people, maybe.
Are they?
Some people still, you know, think that I'm at the register.
Do they really?
News to them a little bit. Ran into a couple people out west this past weekend that it was news to them. You know, they're not maybe quite as plugged in as some of the other people in the wrestling world. But no, it's been a lot of fun.
You were at Pac-12s talking about all corners of the earth, all corners of the world. Pac-12s in Corvallis, Oregon. Unique in that there's five teams, but it's still a relevant conference because Arizona State's making it relevant. Six individual champions ran away with the team title. Seems like they really are that program that we're going to have to watch out for as they sneak into that mix of title contenders in the next 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a full throttle approach from their athletic administration. They are all in on wrestling. They're all in on Olympic sports. They've made some high profile hires. Ray Anderson, the athletic director, brought in Herm Edwards as a football coach. Bobby Hurley is a basketball coach. Bob Bowman, as the swimming coach, Zeke Jones as the wrestling coach. They've added four new varsity programs in the 4 years that he's been the athletic director. They're taking their athletic budget and potentially, you know, talks of it going from, you know, $100 million athletic budget to $150 million. And just where they're headed as an athletic department bodes well for the wrestling program, and they're keeping their foot on the gas, and lots of exciting things going on with Arizona State Athletics and then the Sun Devil wrestling program as well.
Remember your interviews, I liked that you had a comprehensive approach to who you interviewed. I was probably most fascinated with some of the people who aren't necessarily in wrestling, what they had to say, their perspective on wrestling. Can you delve into that a little bit and what you heard and just maybe some of the encouragement about people that you don't necessarily identify with the sport that were advocating for the sport?
Yeah, like I said, Ray Anderson got a chance to spend a half hour in his office last week. And I don't know if too many athletic directors that you can get a half hour of their time for a sit down interview, you know, unless you're a major, major metropolitan newspaper or a national publication for, you know, for a high profile sport, but, him taking the time for us, greatly appreciated. We got about 45 minutes. I got the chance to sit down and Don Bakke, the senior, associate athletic director who oversees wrestling. He has been at ASU for 34 years. We got a chance to talk about, basically the highs and lows that, he has seen with the Sun Devil program. I mean, he was a football coach on a team that won the Rose Bowl at Arizona State. He was around ASU when they won the 1988 NCAA championship. He talked about his, you know, a guy that's won a Rose Bowl. He said his proudest moment at Arizona State was when Anthony Robles won an NCAA wrestling title. And on the flip side of things, he said his worst day at Arizona State was the day that they dropped wrestling. It was dropped for 3 days. And then, of course, Art Martori and company stepped in to raise the funds to bring it back. Think about where they were 10 years ago and where they are now. It's a pretty stark contrast, not just for wrestling, but swimming got dropped too. And then they go out and bring in Bob Bowman as the coach. Men's tennis got dropped there as well. They were, that program was on the shelf for, I think, about 8-9 years. And then Ray Anderson and company brought it back. And I think within a year, like a year or so, they've gone into the top 30 nationally in the national rankings. So, that's been pretty cool. We got a chance. Stuff we haven't even posted yet. Lee Pritz and I went around campus. He kind of gave me the quasi-recruit tour that they would take and got to see their student-athlete center, which is brand new there. We got to go to the Barrett Honors program and see where you get a 387. You qualify, I think, for the Barrett Honors program. Lee said that I think a year ago, like roughly a quarter of their roster there were guys that were in the Barrett Honors program, and so that was all pretty cool stuff to see. And then, of course, I mean, you know, going from Iowa in late February down to Tempe and seeing all the palm trees and stuff like that, that wasn't bad either. Even though I looked up yesterday and it was 62 degrees up here in the Cedar Valley on my drive home, and I was looking just to see what it was in Tempe, and I think it was like mid-50s at the time, so that's not something you see every day.
Oh, just a flip-flop there. Wouldn't have expected that. While the Pac-12 is gaining some momentum, trying to get more teams into the Pac-12, the Big Ten is as strong as it's ever been. It's actually 14 teams in the Big Ten. They all have wrestling, and it really starts and stops there in our sport. You have a Big Ten network. You have the powerhouses there in Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, and Iowa. Those could be your trophy teams at the NCAA championships. Those could be your top four teams potentially, just given what's happened this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, they've proven it over the course of the season that Penn State and Ohio State are on a little bit different plane than everybody else right now. Although, you know, Michigan had a really tight duel with Ohio State. But yeah, what we're seeing is two super teams right now, two of the best teams on paper, that maybe we've ever seen in college wrestling. Now, Ohio State, it's going to need some guys like Colin Moore to step up and wrestle like he did the first, year and a half of his career and get it back together and be in the hunt for Big Ten and NCAA titles there for the Buckeyes to have a shot. But certainly a ton of compelling storylines around this tournament, not just with those four teams, but Nick Soriano, we haven't seen him on the mat in a while. What's he going to bring to the table in East Lansing? Same with Jason Nolf at 157. I don't know that there's a more fascinating storyline going into the postseason, at least for me, than the Jason Nolf angle, because if he's right, I mean, he's been head and shoulders above everybody else at that weight class for, since Imar got out of town and went up to 165. So that's really fascinating. And then, you throw in the dynamics of the team race there and how much Penn State needs him. Pretty fascinating stuff to watch.
It's pretty amazing that we only kind of mentioned it last week or on one of our shows or one of the outlets. We mentioned Imar. He's in his senior year, and I don't know that there's been this push or this sentimentality of a great wrestler being lost and to graduation. It's really going to be interesting to see where his career plays out and how this ends for him and how we remember Imar, because he had flashes of brilliance, some times where he maybe had a little bit of a lull, but always that guy that you wanted to watch compete.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's sitting here going into his fourth Big Ten tournament. He's got three Big Ten titles and two career losses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got as many NCAA titles as career losses at this point in his career. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, people haven't talked about him a whole lot from the standpoint this year that I think, I mean, you know, even Imar said it on Twitter, like this era is the Kyle Snyder era. And then you take you know, look past Kyle, and it's Zane Rutherford winning the Hodge a year ago and sitting there as a front runner to do it again and to claim his third NCAA title and just such a dominant career that he's had. There's, you know, I don't know that, you know, we've really, at least in my 20 years of covering the sport, really had this many stars at one time, this many high profile stars at one time. I mean, just think about it. I mean, there's never been a Snyder, right? Where guy that's been the pound for pound number one wrestler in the world. And you know, he's sitting there as the number two seed in the Big Ten. Yeah,
that's unreal.
Yeah.
And to put in perspective where Penn State is, Dan Gable is the standard bearer in our sport, 21 seasons. Through the course of those 21 seasons, he had six three-time NCAA champions. And so that includes Joe Williams, who carried over into a year with Jim Zaleski. But other than that stat right there, you have Penn State. Ed Ruth was the first three-time NCAA champ in Penn State's history. They have a chance to have five in the course of 3 years. That's unprecedented. I mean, Cale Sanderson has a chance to match Dan Gable in the next 3 years. Zane's probably going to win, so he's going to probably get number two here. And then you have the rest of those four that could get it in the next 2 to 3 years. That's pretty remarkable what Cale Sanderson's done with those guys.
Yeah, the thing that's been really impressive to me is just how many guys are coming into that program equipped to win right away, to win big right away. And, yeah, you look at the roster. Like last year, you have two freshman national champs, winning national titles. But that being said, I mean, you know, they're not slam dunks this year. I mean, Mark Hall's going to have to contend with Bo Jordan at the Big Ten Championships and Miles Amin and you know, some other guys there. NCAA championships, you bring Zahid Valencia into the equation, and Zahid's had a lot of success through the years against Mark Hall, and he's only sitting there with one career loss. You know, Vincenzo is going to have to tangle with Alex Marinelli potentially this weekend, or Logan Massa. IMR 165 in the Big Ten is crazy deep when you're looking at Tashawn Campbell and Isaiah White as the 8-9 potentially meeting just to get into the quarters. And they've been ranked inside the top 10 this season nationally.
If we switch over to the Big 12, this is interesting because you finally do have 12 teams in the Big 12, which I think is fantastic. I think we would both agree that Oklahoma State's going to maybe not run away with it, but they're the clear-cut favorite. They're likely going to win it. The race for second, you have some teams there that have been consistent throughout the year. What team are we saying might get second? Northern Iowa's in the mix. South Dakota State's in the mix. Oklahoma probably not as much, but there's some teams that can push into that that upper tier, and maybe in the next few years they could even win a Big 12 title if they have the right team.
Yeah, I think Wyoming's in the discussion too. I mean, you got a lot of top individuals there, starting with Bryce Meredith as the number one seed at 141, Montori Bridges at 133. Some other guys throughout that lineup are certainly capable of finishing high on that podium this week. I think you're right. I think it's Oklahoma State, but I don't think they're the runaway winner like they were a year ago, where it was practically Oklahoma State versus the conference dual meet in the finals. But I think it's trending more towards parity. You know, they're, like I said, they're still the clear cut favorite, and probably for the foreseeable future too. But you got to think that Iowa State is going to be on the rise. Oklahoma is going to be on the rise. Fresno State has done tremendous things in year one, and that's such a fertile recruiting area out there that you know, Troy Steiner and company have right there in the, you know, Fresno Clovis area. I'm excited about the future of the Big 12 you know, and then let's see where this thing heads with the Pac-12. I know the Pac-12, there's been mention of them. You know, that was one of the hot topics out in Corvallis this past weekend, was what's the future look like for the Pac-12? Is there a possibility for a super conference qualifier with the Pac-12 and Big 12 merging? Going to be a fun couple of years here in wrestling to see where this goes.
We've gotten excited about the preview. Just want to make sure we preview that Joe McFarland is our guest today. He's the head wrestling coach at the University of Michigan. We talked about team contenders from the Big Ten. They're certainly one of those. trophy contenders from the Big Ten for the NCAA championships: Penn State, Ohio State, Iowa, Michigan. We mentioned Oklahoma State. Let's go with the other two that I think have a chance at a trophy. That's Missouri and NC State. Missouri ends the year with an undefeated dual meet record. Probably going to run away with it in the MAC. They have the firepower. They have guys that are going to get first place in a lot of those weight classes. At the MAC, it really is Missouri and everyone else.
Yeah, that's what happened when Northern Iowa leaves to go to the Big 12, right? I mean, that takes like their top challenger away, the team that gave them the most problems here in recent years. And so, yeah, it does feel like Missouri against everybody else. And it's a team that it's pretty interesting how it's constructed. I mean, not a lot of super high-profile recruits, but Brian Smith and company have been able to evaluate, develop probably about as good as just about anybody out there in recent years with their ability to kind of uncover hidden gems in recruiting. And now you're looking at Jaden Ironman, Daniel Lewis, Willie Miklas, Joey LaValle is, there's four guys right there. Capable Grant Leith, another guy, John Ernesty, several guys in that lineup that are capable of finishing on the podium, and a few of them in there that are capable of being in the finals on Saturday night in Cleveland. So, yeah, it's certainly a team that's in trophy contention.
Good point on that, because they don't really have that standout star power. You don't have that Jaden Cox this season. It's just a bunch of high performers that are in that middle All-American ground, probably led by Daniel Lewis at 174. It's going to be interesting to see where he ends up. I like his style. He's good on top, so it's going to be fun to see where they shake out. NC State, the other team that I think is in trophy contention, they have a nice lineup from top to bottom, too. They've had some good competition this year. Is it their year to finally get a trophy?
Could be. They're going to need some guys. A year ago, they felt like a team to me that was better equipped for the duels than they were for the NCAA championships, where they were solid, top to bottom, but they didn't have enough guys capable of finishing high on the podium. This year, you look up and down that lineup. You put Pete Renda back in the lineup at 184. Mike Machiavello is at 197, just had a win over Colin Moore. 197 looks completely wide open. Hayden Heidley has had a tremendous freshman season, undefeated going into the ACC championship. So, those guys with Kevin Jack at 141, they're kind of similar to Missouri, right? I mean, they got four or five guys that are capable of finishing high up on the podium, potentially being in contention to be there on Saturday night. But that could be said for, I think, about five or six teams in there, right? I mean, you could say the same thing about Iowa. You could say the same thing about Missouri, NC State, Michigan, Lehigh, Arizona State, so on and so forth. I think the trophy race in Cleveland is going to be fantastic. I think there's 7-8 teams outside of Penn State and Ohio State that'll be jockeying for trophies.
Well, you mentioned Lehigh, Arizona State. If we extend it to maybe 10 teams, who would that 10th team be that would be in the mix for the top four spots? Cornell, could they sneak in there?
Yeah, I think Cornell could. When you look at Yanni Diakamahalis and Ben Darmstadt, the two freshmen that are up near the top of the rankings at 41 and 97, that's a team. Virginia Tech has been right there, in the top 10, I think, pretty much all season long. They're in the discussion. I feel like we're leaving somebody out, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah,
we may have covered them all here.
I think
Oklahoma State.
We talked about Oklahoma State being a trophy contention. They're the clear favorite of the Big 12. And I think for me, and maybe you, I think there's seven teams that have a legitimate shot at that top four spots. Of course, Penn State, Ohio State, and then the Michigan, Iowa from the Big 10, Oklahoma State from the Big 12, NC State, and then Missouri. Those were the seven that I was thinking of. And then
Don't forget Lehigh.
Well, yeah, we're running out. You have Lehigh, you have Arizona State, and then we just mentioned a couple other teams there, whether it's Cornell. And those are probably the 10 right there. But, of course, there's other teams that can sneak in there and have some firepower. You mentioned Virginia Tech. Just trying to think of other teams that could be in that mix and really push the envelope.
Wyoming's been on, they've been inside our top 10 at times this year. They've bounced in and out of it. Yeah, I think you start looking down the rankings and like 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 in the rankings, maybe even down to 15. I think South Dakota State's sitting there at 15. There's not a lot of separation between 15 and like 8. So really all it takes is one guy having a, you know, heck of a tournament in Cleveland that could vault somebody like South Dakota State up into the top 8. Or conversely, I mean, teams sitting there at 8 like Oklahoma State, if they have somebody falter, they could fall down into that range outside the top dozen.
A couple teams that usually get mentioned that we haven't, Nebraska and Minnesota, not necessarily right there, but still have some guys that have shown that they can be in the mix. Ethan Lezak was a runner-up last year, and Nebraska has a few good guys. Not saying they're necessarily going to be in the trophy hunt, but always teams to watch at the NCAA championships and Big Tens.
Yeah, Minnesota's been pretty interesting this year. I mean, you start out with Lezak returning NCAA finalist, and I don't know that we've ever seen a returning NCAA finalist get teched twice in the same season. And, yeah. He's run into a buzzsaw a couple times. I mean, Nathan Tomasello was on fire when he ran into him, and then Spencer Lee rolled him up, beat him in all three positions, got away from him. So Lezak goes in as the 5 seed for Big Ten, which tells you a lot about the weight class itself. And, you know, the Gophers are going to need him to come through. They're going to need him to come through. Tommy Thorne, Mitch McKee, Nick Wanzek for them. We're so accustomed to seeing Minnesota with some, you know, I don't want to say automatics, but guys that you know are going to finish in the top 5. And right now, you know, they really don't have that one automatic where they're strong. There are some deep weight classes, 25, 41. And so they're going to need guys like that to come through. They're going to need, you know, a big performance out of Mitch McKee, or I think he's certainly capable. Help is on the way, definitely, for the Gophers. You know, when you bring in Gable Steveson and company, a really strong recruiting class next year. They're going to be an interesting team to watch in March.
All right, we'll end with this before we get to Joe McFarland. Weight class to watch for the postseason. What's your number one weight class that you think we need to focus in on at the NCAA championships?
Oh, boy. I think you could go a lot of different ways with this. I mean, I'm going to say 197 because I don't know that there is a weight class that's more wide open right now. And it, to me, at the beginning of the year, felt like it was Colin Moore on his own plateau, and then about 2 or 3, 4 other guys on their tier. And then all the way down from about 5 down to about 20, it felt like you could just throw those guys into a hat and start pulling out names, you know, week to week, event to event. And now you're seeing, like, shoot, with Penn State having, you know, a couple guys there that looked like they could be in contention to maybe win the thing. Colin Moore has shown a little bit of, some dents in the armor, maybe a little bit here in the last month or so. Jared Hawk got pinned by Willie Miklas, but he was controlling the match up to that point. And then Miklas beats Preston Weigel. And, you know, there's just a lot of back and forth at that weight class. And to me, that's going to be one that you look at where teams shake out in the team trophy race. That's going to have a lot of bearing on it, I think, because of the fact that a lot of the teams that we just talked about have somebody in that 1 to 20 range at 197 pounds, and those guys could go all over the board for where they finish. So
I'm going to go with 141 for the reason you talked about, just because that is that quarterfinal round, even the round of 16, is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
You just don't even know what's going to shake out there. You have a 2-time NCAA champion, returning NCAA champion that's not favored, lost 4 times this year. It's insane. And you talk about all the freshmen coming in, and Jaden Ironman and Diakomihalis, and it just goes on and on and on because it's so deep. Really, to me, the most wide open weight class. Round of 16 is going to feel like a quarterfinal round in some ways, just because there's going to be that much parity in that weight class. Don't know if Dean Hyle's the guy this year. I don't know if he'll get three. I would say he's not going to at this point, just based on what's happened this season. Even though he only lost one match over the last 2 years, it's been a interesting season because some guys have stepped up. So
yeah, he lost what, four out of eight at one point, I think.
Was it 4 out of 8? Yeah,
maybe somewhere in there, maybe string three in there. Out of 8, something like that. But yeah, he went through a rough stretch, and you know, the one thing about Dean Hyle is even when he was a freshman and he was struggling, he put it together in March. And does he find a way to kick it in and finish strong? You know, but you're right, there's a lot of guys that can win that weight class. You know, there's 4, 5, 6 guys that probably think they have a pretty good shot at winning it. And you know, I think we could sit here and we could probably talk for a half hour about interesting weight classes, right? I mean, 25 is going to be super fascinating. You know, Big Tens and beyond. 165, we touched upon that, the depth that the Big Ten has, and then you throw a couple other guys into the mix there. 74, with the possibility of another rematch with Zahid Valencia and Mark Hall somewhere down the line. Guys that always feel, you know, we look back maybe a month ago and it felt like, you know, felt like Snyder and then Adam Kuhn and then everybody else at heavyweight. And then that gets jumbled up with Kuhn beating Snyder.
Yeah.
You know, the Jason Nolf injury really adds a lot of intrigue to 157. Joseph getting beat by Alex Marinelli at 165. It's shaping up to be a really wild march.
You keep going through the storylines. I don't know that there's a weight class that there is not a reason to be excited about. Every weight class is going to be fun top to bottom, so it should be good. We're going to patch Joe McFarland into the line right now. Joe McFarland, head wrestling coach at the University of Michigan, 4-time All-American for the Wolverines, also a world silver medalist in 1986. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing well, guys. How about yourself?
Good hey, we're here. It's postseason time. I hope you get excited for this. You've been around it a long time. This has got to be a lot of fun for you.
Yeah, it is. I think the anxiety level, you know, heightens up a bit, you know, so if you consider that fun. But no, it really is. It's an exciting time of the year, for I think, for everybody.
What does that feel like going into the postseason? I like your comment there, the anxiety level. Does it feel like a noose around your neck, or do you have a little bit of relaxation?
No, I mean, you know, obviously everybody's on high alert, and you want to make sure your guys are ready, and you're doing the little things, you know, at the end of the year that you feel you need to be doing, along with the rest of your coaching staff. And you know, I think in regards to our team, these guys look really, really, you know, peppy and excited about the Big Tens and NCAAs coming up. So that's always a good sign when your guys are excited about it and you see smiles on their faces when they're walking in the practice room, you know. So, yeah, and it's going to be, you know, in regards to the two tournaments we have ahead of us, the Big Tens and Nationals. I mean, it's going to be some great matches and I think we're looking forward to it.
The Big Tens are in East Lansing, Michigan. I know that's your rival school, but is that nice for you, kind of having that Michigan flavor, being able to just travel a little bit less than normal?
Yeah, we've been really fortunate, to be honest with you, because our month of February, we spent most of the time at home. We did a lot of traveling in January, and so that was nice. And then, you know, with East Lansing only being, you know, under an hour north of us, and then the NCAAs in Cleveland, which is about 2.5 hours from here. So, and that's my hometown. So it's really been great for us in regards to, you know, getting maybe a little bit more rest over the course of time.
Adam Kuhn is a guy that we get to see for the final time this year. We've had 5 years of him, took a redshirt year last year. But have you been around a guy that's bigger, more powerful, quicker than Adam Kuhn?
You know, I tell you what, to be quite honest with you, no, I haven't. I mean, he's just been a joy to have in our program and, you know, not only just because of his work ethic and match results, but really just because of what kind of person he is. I mean, he very, very mature. The expression I used early on was he was 18, going on 30 when we recruited him. He just really, you know, has had all his priorities in line, you know, family, you know, school and wrestling. And he's really just, Ben, you know, he's to a degree, he's a gentle giant, but he's real mild mannered, focus driven, intense. I mean, you throw all that together and you have Adam Kuhn.
Joe, what are the biggest differences between Adam Kuhn of 2016 and Adam Kuhn of 2018? What did the redshirt year do for him?
Well, you know, he came in and one of it's just maturity, you know, experience. I think that always obviously helps. But, you know, he had his shoulder fixed, and, you know, coming in, he had a torn labrum in his shoulder coming in, and we were always able to manage it. You know, here's a kid that, you know, he did a lot of wrestling. He was a heck of a football player. So with that being said, with that tear in his labrum, you know, he was very limited on some of the upper body stuff he could do, such as like bench press, overhead press, those kind of things. So I think once he had that shoulder repaired, you know, he's been able to do a lot of those lifts now. And I think his upper body's developed a little bit more. I think that and you know, combined with just maturity and experience and stuff has really put him, you know, sort of where he's at right now with his wrestling.
What was the buzz like when Adam Kuhn beat Kyle Snyder?
Well, obviously that was a huge win for Adam. You know, I know Adam has a lot of respect for everybody he competes against, but he's done a really good job of just putting that behind him and really focusing on moving forward, because he knows that, you know, that he needs to stay focused from match to match, you know, obviously throughout the Big Tens and NCAAs, but at the same time, I think he also recognizes that there's a possibility of maybe two more matches with Kyle. So I think it was a nice win, obviously, for him. It was a confidence builder, but at the same time, he really did a really good job of keeping it in perspective and putting it behind him. You know, like I said, he's got a pretty good head on his shoulders, and he's done a good job of keeping things in perspective.
I think everyone knew that you were going to have a good team going into the season. Got off to a little bit of a slow start, but even though it was a loss against Ohio State, you went 5-5 against them. I think you have to feel good about where you're going with your program going into the Big Tens and then the NCAA tournament. That had to be a confidence boost for you guys.
Yeah, I think it was to a degree. I mean, you know, it was a little bittersweet. I think that's the word we were using after that duel. I mean, you've had a few things gone a little differently. Maybe we could have won that duel, you know, and which obviously that's what you set out to do. But I told the guys how proud, you know, I was of their effort that night. And, I think to a degree was, you know, I think we showed everybody that we should be in that conversation as one of the top elite teams in the country.
You had three freshmen place in the top four last year. Have you seen some improvement from those guys going into their sophomore season?
I think so. Just going through that grind, I think, is really important. And you mentioned earlier, you know, we had a few, you know, we fought probably like most teams. You know, we fought through some bumps and bruises, you know, earlier in the season, and some guys were competing maybe on limited mat time and training time. And so sometimes I think that may have showed in our results, but, you know, for the most part now we're completely healthy. And I think that we were starting to build at the end of the year, and hopefully our best wrestling's, you know, ahead of us here, the Big Tens and NCAAs.
You talked early in the season about injuries, and you have fought some injuries the last couple of years. You really compared it to what you went through when you were at Michigan compared to now. Compare and contrast that. What was it like how you approached injuries when you were competing in the 80s versus now how a college athlete compartmentalizes an injury and how they fight through it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Things were a little different back then. You know, I mean, now with technology, modern technology and stuff, I mean, we're able to diagnose a lot of this stuff maybe a little bit earlier and sooner, whereas back then, you know, sometimes you had either yourself or teammates were just sort of wrestling through some things best you could, you know. So, you know, I don't know. Like I said, it's probably a whole different time now, and I think there's better care for our student athletes and our wrestlers, which is probably a good thing. And sometimes if they have to sit out a few weeks to really you know, keep themselves to prevent themselves, I should say, from further injury or making it worse, it's always a good thing, you know. So, yeah, you just have to we have a really good trainer who's been with us for a long time. I think that's important. He understands wrestling and, you know, does a good job with these guys. And great thing is, I think about this, we've never had you know, over the years with surgery and recovery, we've never had any reoccurrences, whether it's a shoulder, you know, shoulder repair or ACL repair. We've been pretty fortunate in that regard. But I think every team probably goes through it, right? I mean, it's just that's part of like trying to balance out the hard training and the rest and recovery, you know, so you don't overtrain your guys and so you don't put these guys in positions to become injured with maybe too much live practice and those kind of things. So it's not always easy.
Well, yeah, you were 166, 24-4 during your college career, 48 wins in 1984. That's a lot of matches. Did that just seem normal to you at that time?
Yeah, it really was. It was a grind, though, I'll be honest with you. My freshman year was a big adjustment because, you know, it probably is for every high school kid. But, you know, I mean, back then, if you think about it and you look at the number of matches that we had annually, you know, we competed on, you know, the Thanksgiving weekend. We competed at the, you know, the Midlands, you know, after the holiday weekend. And it was just a grind. And, I look back at it, there was really only one NCAA tournament where I was completely 100% healthy, you know. But I'm sure a lot of wrestlers could probably say the same thing. And a lot of them, even this year, you'll probably see some guys that are fighting through injuries. And that's part of our sport. You know, you have to develop that mindset where you can focus on your wrestling and maybe work around or even train around some of your injuries as you're trying to get through them. Some of them are just bumps and bruises, and some of them are a little more serious. But I mean, you're really in our sport. It's the physical nature of it. You just have to be able to have that mindset. You can fight through and wrestle through injuries.
Did you cut a lot of weight your freshman, sophomore year? You're at 118, then bumped up your last 2 years to 126. Was that a tough cut?
My sophomore year was probably tough, you know, and that was sort of the side of the times, I think, back then, you know. But yeah, my sophomore year was really tough. I had to be super disciplined, but I learned a lot about myself. And, you know, I had a year when I was in high school where I was cutting a little bit of weight. And so, you know, I understood that, you know, how to do it. Obviously, the practices now are completely different, a little healthier now these days. But, yeah, then moving up. By my senior year, it wasn't easy to make 26 either, to be honest with you. But you know, I was a little, you know, it was my fifth year. I was more mature. I really understood where my diet needed to be and how to be disciplined and keep my weight management from day to day throughout the week if I had a competition coming up on a weekend. So I think from that standpoint, I really understood the weight cutting aspect.
You mentioned you're from Cleveland, Ohio, and traditionally you've had a great recruiting base out of Ohio. Is that something, because you're from that area, that you really want to focus on getting Ohio kids into your program?
Yeah, no question. I mean, I'm from being from Ohio, and especially the Cleveland area, it was always a hot spot of recruiting, you know, when I was growing up. And then, you know, as I went through my college years and into my coaching years, I mean, you know, just the state's very competitive. You know, I think it's one of the top recruiting states in the country. And so we've always wanted to try to get, you know, some of the good kids out of the Ohio area. And so it's been, you know, for us, it's been a great thing for our program. And you know, we obviously just north of the border. And, you know, everybody talks about the Ohio-Michigan, rivalry. And there is a huge one, you know, but some of those Ohio kids are still going to want to go north.
Joe, let's while we're on the topic of Cleveland kids, let's talk about Dominic Abinader for a second here. Couple of really close matches against the top two guys in the national rankings, matches that could have gone either way in the final minute. What were your takeaways from his matches against Bo Nickel and Miles Martin, and what is his approach going forward?
Well, we always felt, you know, Dom can compete with anybody in the country, and I think he's capable as much as anybody at that weight, winning the Big Tens and Nationals. I think for him, it was one, maybe a little bit of a confidence thing. And then secondly, it's for him just really getting his offense going. You know, the more aggressive he is, you know, obviously the better things happen for him. I mean, he just needs to stay on his leg attacks. And I think he did that in both those matches. He made a few mistakes, and it cost him. But both those matches between him and Bo Nickel and Miles Martin, both those matches came right down to the end. So I think really for Dom, it's just going to be opening up and being really, really comfortable and extending himself in these matches and really getting after it and being hungry. And I think if he does that, I think good things can happen to him.
Up a weight class at 197, you got a nice transfer, an All-American from Old Dominion, and Kevin Beasley. Has he been a nice addition to your program?
Yeah, no question. You know, he's originally a Michigan kid, so we knew him, you know, prior to his going to Old Dominion, and it was always nice to get him back. He's in graduate school here, and so he's, you know, when you get a guy like that back in your program, you've got a guy that has, you know, the experience under his belt. He's got the maturity under his belt. So when you get somebody who's in graduate schools and in his fifth year, I think that's always a positive.
You have some real deep connections with past All-Americans in the program, past national champions, whether it's the Chiarellas, the Cliff Keen family legacy with Cliff Keen Arena and just the product line. Has that enhanced your program and be able to have those guys to rely on to advance Wolverine wrestling?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, you know, you mentioned the Chiarella family. Obviously, everybody, I think, in the wrestling community knows that name. And, you know, Josh is one of my assistant coaches. He does a tremendous job. The Keen family, you know, I go way back with those guys. I'm really, really close with Jim Keen and Tom Keen, who now runs the company. And they've done a lot of really good things, not only for, you know, wrestling across the United States, even at the grassroots level, but, you know, they've done a lot of great things for our program, you know, so I can't thank the Keene family enough and what they've done for wrestling and University of Michigan wrestling.
Joe, when you look at the season that Logan Massa has had and the stuff he's had to overcome, how close is he to getting back to where he was at the end of last year?
I think I'll be honest with you. And this is probably going to sound like a coach talking here, but I think he's right there now. Just in the last, and we knew, you know, that was a difficult thing for him to come back from. That was his drive leg and stuff. And you know, he's one of those guys. He's a great, great competitor. You know, when he wrestled, Joseph, at Penn State, you know, we were not expecting him to wrestle that night, to be quite honest with you. He'd only had, you know, very, very limited, mat time, and it wasn't even live, but he's the one that decided he wanted to wrestle at the last minute. That's the kind of guy he is, but obviously it didn't work out in his favor, but it was a starting point for him, and he knew where he was at that moment and where he needed to get to. And I really think I see the same old competitive Logan Massa in our practice room now. You know, he's very competitive in the room, and sometimes he voices that, and it's great to. And I think he's back. I think he's as close to 100% as I've seen, and so I'm excited about watching him compete this weekend.
Hey, that's
one of the toughest weight classes too. You think about it. I mean, 125, 165, and those are two really, really tough weight classes. But man, 165 is crazy tough.
Looking back at the season, what was the quintessential win or the quintessential moment in this season? Because it has been a solid season for you, and you guys are in a good position. Was there a turning point in the season for you where you felt like it was clicking?
I think down the stretch a little bit, you know, like I said, we'd been through some bumps and bruises. Maybe I felt like we really got started getting a lot of traction in February. I felt we wrestled well against Penn State in mid-January, and you know, we had a nice crowd there at Chrysler Center. But I really felt like once, you know, as you know, Logan's continued to come back from his injury, and I felt like really, in the month of February, we really started getting some traction and where we could really be a force at the Big Ten and Nationals.
You have an interesting career, four-time All-American. You reached the finals twice. Barry Davis, Kevin Darkus, both guys that are world silver medalist and Olympic silver medalist. You happen to be a world silver medalist. Do you think about the competition level that you had to face and what that was like and just building you into the wrestler that you became?
Yeah, no question. I knew early on where the bar was. I mean, you know, I mean, as a youngster, you know, you get to see some of these guys through the years. But, you know, when I got to college, especially with Barry being at Iowa and Kevin being at Iowa State, I knew where the bar was going to be and where I needed to get to, you know. And so, yeah, that was those guys were two guys in particular that really motivated me to try to become the wrestler I ended up being. And obviously I didn't win them all against those guys, but we had some some great matches, and you know, I can say that I'm friends with both those guys to this day. So
yeah, I was going to ask that. Have you ever just sat down with Barry Davis and talked about your matches and rehashed some of those times, Iowa versus Michigan?
You know, Barry and I get along very well. I mean, we're you know, obviously we're still competitors to a degree because we're at the other sides of the mat of each other now at the coaching ranks. But you know, I became really good friends with Kevin Darkus. You know, after we graduated from college, we even get together at times and train together. Kevin would come in and spend some time at our summer camps, and him and I would work out a lot. And so, but at the same time, over the years, I've developed really good relationship with Barry as well. You know, now like I said earlier, we're both coaching against each other, but we keep things in perspective, and we have a pretty strong relationship. You know, so that's always good to see. Especially as you get older, it's great to see that.
We're in an era right now where world medalists get put on a pedestal, and for good reason. I think it's great that we're in that era. You got a world medal, 136.5 pounds in 1986. You got a silver medal. Do you feel like at the time that it was given the appreciation and the love that it deserves to actually get to that high level and win a world medal?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, I know me personally, just thinking back about all the sacrifices that I made, you know, obviously, you know, yeah, I was disappointed I didn't win that match because I was able to, you know, come back and beat that guy a few times, you know, later on. But, you know, I made a mistake or two in that match and it cost me early. But, yeah, I think I've always had like a self-appreciation for the sacrifices that I was able to make, you know, throughout the years. I wasn't like this highly touted recruit that came out of Cleveland. I was just always one of those guys that set high goals for myself and made big sacrifices and just approached it one day at a time. And I was been very fortunate. I've been around some, you know, had some really good role models in my life and stuff. And you know, so yeah, it's been a few years ago now, if you think about it though, guys. I mean, 1986,
well, a few years ago. but John Smith, right after you, took that run of six in a row. Did you know that he was going to be capable of doing something special like that?
Well, you know, I competed with, you know, against John a few times too, at that weight class. And I knew, you know, I think everybody knew, how special John was but who could have guessed that at the time. Right. But he went on and just did some great things, had a spectacular career. And then, you know, has been a really great, great head coach at Oklahoma State. So, and then you throw in like another teammate of mine, John Fisher, who I think was a force at that weight class, probably didn't get the recognition that I felt he deserved just because one, John Smith was in there, and then Tom Brands was in right there after, and John battled both those guys. So John's a dear friend of mine who coaches here in the Ann Arbor school district. So he's been very close to our program over the years.
With a last name like McFarland, of course, that means you're Irish. A few years ago, you had a chance to go over to Ireland with your dad. What were the takeaways from a trip like that to have a special, meaningful trip with your dad in Ireland?
Yes, you know, I mean, no question. But I'll be honest with you, right now, the hair on the back of my neck is raising up because both my parents are gone now. And my dad and I did this thing. I was doing a camp over at Lake and Heath Air Force Base, which was in north side of London. And while I was over there, we had some police officers and wrestling coaches from Edinburgh, Scotland. They had asked me, "Hey, would you be interested in coming up and doing a camp up in Edinburgh for a couple of days?" And I thought, "Yeah, I can do that." So we arranged that. I called my mom and said, "Hey, mom, I've got this opportunity to do this camp up in Edinburgh. Why don't you fly dad over at the end of the week? He can go up on the train with me. We'll go up there and we'll do this camp. They're going to put us up. And then him and I can fly from there over to Dublin. And then we'll spend, you know, a week over in Ireland, just sort of, you know, mooching around a little bit." And, it was a really emotional trip for both of us, especially my dad, cause we found the house that his mom was born and raised in and stuff. And he was the oldest of three. So it was a great trip. We got to see some of his first cousins and spend some time with them. And then a few years later, I think it was back 2006 or seven, my wife and I took my parents for one last time over to Ireland and sort of did the same kind of stuff. He saw his cousins again and stuff. And so, yeah, like I said, the hair on my back, my neck you know, raised up when you said that, just because both my parents are gone now. So it was a great, great couple trips for us.
And were they pretty supportive growing up with all your wrestling and all your endeavors?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm one of seven. There were six boys and one girl. I'm second youngest. Irish Catholic family on the west side of Cleveland. My dad was a firefighter for the city of Cleveland. And, so yeah, I'm sure it wasn't easy, you know, from their perspective, but, I mean, the support, the love that they gave us, there was a lot of discipline in our household. And I'll be quite honest with you. I don't think I would have gotten to where I did if it wasn't for the way I was raised by my mom and dad. You know, they had a deep faith, and a lot of love for family. And, there was a lot of discipline. We knew if we got out of line that, you know, we'd get it. I got my rear end swatted more than a few times growing up, but, you know, we all had responsibilities. We all had little jobs we had to do around the house. All the boys had paper routes. So I think all that stuff, for me added up to me being able to have the kind of success I did in the sport of wrestling. Cause I think the sport of wrestling demands a lot of discipline and hard work. And I think I learned that early on from my parents. And, you know, be honest with you, those two were my two heroes growing up.
But do you take pride in Cleveland when it does well, when the Indians make it to the World Series or the Cavaliers win the NBA championship? Is that a point of pride for you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And not only just with my family, but also with just some friends back in the area, back in the Cleveland area and stuff. And so there's a lot of texting going on during some of those events, you know, back and forth, group text and stuff. But there's a lot of fun. I'm also a Detroit fan too. I've been up in this area for so long, so you know, I love to see the Detroit teams do well. So you know, Cleveland and Detroit, those are my two areas and my two sport teams right there.
Joe, you guys have a pretty talented recruiting class coming in, led by Joey Silva and Will Lawan and Mason Paris in particular. What attracted you to those three guys, and how do you see them fitting into your lineup potentially as soon as next year, or if not next year, a couple years down the road?
Yeah, well, I think if you look at all three of those guys that you mentioned, you know, those guys, you know, the way they compete, and really get after it. And, we like the, you know, the way they trained. Also we like their families too. We like the kind of people that they are. And so I think obviously they're going to be a really good fit here at the University of Michigan. You know, in regards to them wrestling next year, we're not really sure at this point, but you know, most likely we're planning a red shirt year for those guys out of the gate. I think it would probably do them all well, but you definitely will see those three guys in a Michigan singlet down the road, and you're going to see those guys getting their hand raised quite a bit. I can see that.
Is that fun for you to still have that recruiting element? Is that a good part of the job?
Yeah, and I think my staff has done a tremendous job. You know Sean Bormet, my associate head coach. He's our recruiting coordinator. He does a really, really good job, and I think these kids, you know, he's. These kids are, you know, they feel what kind of guy Sean is, and they're attracted to him. And I say that along with Josh Chiarella and Kellen Russell too. All three of those guys do a great job. I mean, I can just feel it when we're on campus with recruits and their families, and how these families are looking at my assistant coaches and my entire staff. So I think that's very attractive to recruits and families. You know, the fact that we've all gone through the University of Michigan program. I don't know if there's a staff in the country that can say that. Maybe there is. I'm not really sure. I haven't really, you know, really looked into it, but I think that says a lot about the university itself here. We all have a deep love for the University of Michigan wrestling program. And I think that the way we balance our academics and athletics here at Michigan, we do things the right way. And I think that's attractive to families and recruits around the country as well.
Joe, what makes a prospect a good fit for Michigan? What are some of the things that you look for?
Well, I just touched a little bit on it too. It's just we want to make sure that they're student athletes. You know, it doesn't make sense to bring kids, you know, on campus here that can't compete up in the classroom. And so, you know, we obviously work with our admissions office in regards to whether or not you know, we're going to be able to get a particular recruit in here, just through evaluations. And, but, with that being said, you know, obviously we're looking for a kid that's come from good family and, you know, has a good head on his shoulders and good care of high character. And I think that's really important for us and a work ethic, you know, somebody who's really driven and has a great work ethic, you know, and you mentioned Adam Kuhn earlier, and he's almost the epitome of what you'd look for in a student athlete here at the University of Michigan. Now I understand like not everybody can be, you know, an elite student athlete and be in like the, you know, aerospace engineering program. I really get that. But Adam Kuhn really epitomizes what we're looking for here at the University of Michigan.
Do facilities matter to recruits? Do they care about that?
That's a good question. I would think so. You know, I would think they do to a degree. And, you know, I think, you know, we had a couple of our duels over the Chrysler Center this year because we knew we were going to get nice crowds. And you know, I think it was a great event. And I think for the wrestling fans and for the recruits that you know, we're either here or, you know, we're following it and watching it. I think it was really exciting. And I think recruits now look at all that kind of stuff, you know, especially now with social media and stuff. They look at all that. They can, it's amazing what they have at their fingertips now. And who knows what it's going to be like 10 years from now. It'd be crazy, but
yeah,
I think it's important.
All right, Joe. So it's Wednesday night of the NCAA championships. It's 9 or 10 o'clock and you're getting ready for bed. What does that sleep look like for you?
That's a good question. I might be taking some Tylenol PM that night, just to be honest with you, just so I can doze off, maybe some melatonin. But yeah, I mean, the anxiety level's high, but I think, you know, I don't know. Right now, I feel like I'm in a pretty good spot. I just been had a, you know, just taking the temperature of the guys in the team. They're all excited and they've been really, 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 you know, a lot of energy in our practices this week, which tells me a lot. So, you know, the night before, I mean, yeah, like you said, everybody's anxious and stuff. So, you know, I may have to take some melatonin that night, guys, so I can get some sleep so I can coach the next day.
So you just running through scenarios in your head during the NCAA championships. Yeah. Is that pretty typical?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of times I'd be, you know, you've got the bracket sheet in front of you. You know, you're looking at all the different, you're going out, like now it's on your phone. You're looking at the brackets and you're looking at, you know, looking at the different weight classes and stuff, and you're just hoping and keeping your fingers crossed that you have a great, 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 great weekend and that you guys can win some of those close matches.
All right, Joe, we'll end this formal part of our interview, but we have a game we like to play called the Hot Box. We lock you in the sauna, give you five questions, hoping to make you sweat. Are you ready to go into the Hot Box?
I am. I've been in a few hot boxes in my day.
So, all right. Yeah, well, you've never been in one like this, buddy. Trust me on that. Number one, okay. If you could change anything about the way you were raised, what would it be?
Oh, you know what? I can honestly say nothing. I really nothing. I'm sure I had some bad moments where I was upset at my mom and dad, but looking back on it, I don't know if there's anything I could change because I'd be worried about the results wouldn't be the same.
All right.
Nothing.
Question number two, you're thirsty and a glass of water, a cup of Gatorade, a bottle of pop of your choice, a can of fruit juice of your choice, and a pint of Guinness are in front of you. What beverage will you choose to quench your thirst?
What time of the day is this?
Let's just say it's 7 o'clock at night.
Okay, I'd probably have a Guinness. I'd probably go with a Guinness. After a great day of work and a great workout with the guys, I'd probably have a pint of Guinness.
So you're a Guinness guy? Is that something you traditionally have?
I can honestly say I'm not. I did have some pints, obviously, when I was over there. For some reason, it was a little different over there than it was when I came back. But I like craft beers and stuff. You know, I'll have an occasional beer at night and to relax, but I keep it at a minimum.
Well, will you have a Guinness if your team wins NCAA championships?
I would like to have a Guinness.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Question number three, the fictional character Wolverine is commonly known as Logan. Are there any running jokes on the team about your starting 165-pounder Logan Massa being a Wolverine?
You know what? I have not heard that. So I don't know really much about the character of the Wolverine. Obviously, I those movies were a few years ago, but no, I can honestly say no. I'm not aware of any.
Okay. Question number four, you're Irish. Did you really think that Conor McGregor had a chance at beating Floyd Mayweather in boxing?
I really, I was hoping, to be quite honest with you, I'm a big McGregor fan. I just wanted to make sure. I would just love to see both those guys just an all-out fight. That's what I wanted. I didn't want a boxing match. I just wanted maybe a UFC fight. Yeah, I knew he had his hands full just because, he's just because his background in UFC. But big fan.
Yeah,
big
so
fan
you watched, McGregor. You got that on pay-per-view?
I don't think we've seen the last of them yet either.
Well, did you watch it then? You watched it on pay-per-view?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought he was doing a good job. He was holding his own for a period of time, but I think he wore down after a few rounds. But
all right,
I was impressed with his I was impressed with his striking, to be honest with you. I mean, he really, really hung in there for a while.
All right, question five, and you're out of the hot box. What advice would the 2018 version of Joe McFarland give to the true freshman version of Joe McFarland?
Oh yeah, God, that's a great question. Stay focused on the grind and embrace it, and take it one day at a time, and don't get too keyed up about stuff. Keep your head down, your elbows in, right?
You're out of the hot box, man. I appreciate the time. This has been a lot of fun. You have a great team. We're looking forward to seeing where you guys shake out at the NCAA championships, the Big Tens. Hope you enjoy the journey.
Yeah, sounds good, guys. It was great being on with you, and hopefully I'll see you guys at one of these. Either of you guys going to be up at the Big Ten this weekend?
Andy will. Yep, he's going to be there.
Okay.
So
yep, maybe I'll get a chance to say hi to Andy there and bump into both you guys at the NCAAs in Cleveland, okay?
Hey, we appreciate it a lot. That was Joe McFarland, head wrestling coach at the University of Michigan. Andy, they have a good team. It's going to be fun to watch them. They certainly are one of the best storylines of the NCAA championships. I know we're both going to be interested to see where they shake out, but a lot of firepower with this Wolverine lineup.
Yeah, and they're wrestling better and better as the season goes along, right? I mean, you saw early in the year, Pantaleo went through a rough stretch. Micic got rolled up out in Vegas a couple times. Massa was off the mat there for a long time. As Joe alluded to, he's looking better and better as the season goes along here. So same thing with those other guys. And Micic's been on fire since early December and looking really tough coming down the stretch. Pantaleo's had some big wins along the way, too. So it's a team that's got a lot of horses there.
And we have an opportunity to maybe see Adam Kuhn against Kyle Snyder a couple more times. That's always fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are going to be fun to watch just match to match. Adjustments made on both sides, and boy, it doesn't get much better than that at the heavyweight class.
It's been a lot of fun on the show. Great catching up with Joe McFarland, head wrestling coach at the University of Michigan. For Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com, I'm Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum. You've been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.